As we do every second Monday, we join the team from Africa Check. I absolutely love these conversations because we get to interrogate the veracity of claims that are often thrown around in the course of public discourse. You know, as we engage one another, we rely on different things to bolster our arguments. So every second Monday, you'll hear from the team at Africa Check, which is a not-for-profit organization, and it's set up to promote accuracy in public debates as well as the media across the continent. And the goal of their work is just to raise the quality of information available to society across the continent. You know, we live in an era of fake news and misinformation, and it's not a new phenomenon, but the global nature of web-based information, that environment allows for purveyors of all sorts of falsehoods and misinformation to make an international impact, as we've seen in the US elections. So we thought from time to time, let's interrogate some of these claims. So we're joined, as always in studio, by Kate Wilkinson, who's a researcher at Africa Check. How are you doing, Kate?
I'm good, Azania. It's good to be back with you.
Yeah, so we've got two claims today. And the claims that we'll be interrogating have to do with something that was said by Nelson Mandela Municipality Mayor Athol Trollope. So it pertains to the U.S., how much aid South Africa receives from the United States, and is there a risk of this aid being withdrawn if South Africa decides to expropriate land without compensation, as claimed by Athol Trollope. So we'll interrogate that. But first, let's start with a claim that was made after Donald Trump made those disparaging comments about people from S-hole countries.
Yeah, I was wondering how we were going to maneuver.
I had to really think about that, to prepare myself not to actually say the word.
So yeah, both of our fact checks today have a bit of a US slant.
Yes.
Yes. Like you said, later we're going to be looking at how much aid South Africa actually gets from the US.
Yeah.
And in this case, we're looking at some quite defensive remarks which were made by an organization which says that it represents Nigerians living abroad, mm-hmm. And particularly in the US. And they were pushing back at some of the comments which were made by President of the United States, Donald Trump, about a number of countries, including African countries. And they were quite disparaging remarks, and they were quite harsh on not just the countries, but the people who come from those countries, because mm-hmm. that really is a lot of what the rhetoric in the States is about. It's about immigrants. It's about people coming to the States. Are they bringing good things? Are they adding to our society? Are they detracting? And depending on which side of the debate you lie, your views can be quite strongly held.
Yes, absolutely. And we saw a strong reaction from South Africans as well.
And but the Botswanan government pushed back very hard. So this was a statement. There was a statement released by the Organization for the Advancement of Nigerians, and they're based in New York. And mm-hmm. after these statements were made by President Trump, they released their own statement. And they said in particular that Africans and Nigerians in particular are resilient, hardworking, and productive members of society in America. Mm-hmm. And they went on to add that Nigerians are the most educated immigrants in the United States, and that they have the highest education attainment rate.
And therein is our question.
And therein is the question. So the question is this true?
Yeah.
Are Nigerians the most educated immigrants to the United States? Mm-hmm. Do they have the highest educational attainment rate? So that's what we set out to verify and to fact check.
Yeah, right. So where did you start? And I imagine that a country like the US has a whole lot of data mm-hmm. the whole time.
They do indeed. So the first place we always start is we always go to the person who's made the claim, mm. because you have to give them the benefit of the doubt. You have to include them in the process. We don't do gotcha fact checking. We're not going to fact check on the sly and then jump out and publish a story and say, you were wrong. You lied.
Gotcha.
We're going to say, hey, you said this claim. Can you tell us what it's based on? You know, how did you reach this conclusion? Can you help us verify it? Mm. And we got in touch with them. Unfortunately, we didn't get a response. They didn't tell us where the information came from. Mm. So what we do then is we then go and look for the most recent and reliable information that we can fact check with. And we think when we started looking, we found something that we thought maybe might have influenced what they thought. Mm-hmm. And that was in December of last year, the U.S. Census Bureau released a study. And in the study, what they did released a study. And in the study, what they did was they looked at five sub-Saharan African and Caribbean groups that live in the U.S. So yeah. The groups they looked at were Ethiopian, Nigerian, Haitian, Jamaican, Trinidadian, and Tobago. And these are groups which have a population that is larger than 150,000 people.
In the U.S.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to look specifically at a number of characteristics of these groups. And one of them was their educational status and how far these people have gone in their education.
Mm-hmm.
And it produced some very interesting data.
Right.
And what we can say is that of those five groups, they're not countries, they're groups of ancestry. What they found was that Nigerians did top the class in that group.
Wow.
So they found that 61.4% of Nigerians had a bachelor's degree or higher. And then following, we had Ethiopians at 27%, people from Trinidad and Tobago at 25.7%, Jamaicans at 24.8%, and then Haitians at 19.2%.
But that's within that group, yes. Not necessarily in of all immigrants
absolutely.
In the US.
Absolutely. So that's what was pointed out to us by the Bureau, and what was quite obvious is that we can't talk about all immigrants if we're just looking at five groups.
Yes.
Before we move on, though, it's interesting to point out at this stage what percentage of Americans have a bachelor's degree or higher. Mm-hmm. Because, like we said, Nigerians came in at 61.4%. But when we look at the same measure for Americans, we see that only 29%
what?
Of Americans have a bachelor's degree
what?
Or higher. So
That's a surprise. I would have expected the number to be far higher.
Yeah, so you can see that the sort of argument that the group was trying to make about the value and the hard work that the immigrants are bringing to the country.
But what about other groups, though? Because especially groups of Asian ancestry.
Absolutely. So, like you said, that's just five groups. We can't use that to fact check this claim. So we went back to the Census Bureau, and they pointed us specifically to another study. And we have to look at the wording of what was said by this group. They
Absolutely.
Said immigrants. Mm. And immigrants are people who are born somewhere else and move to a country. They're sometimes called foreign born. So we're not looking at immigrants and their descendants. We're just looking at people who have tried to start a new life and come to a new country.
Mm-hmm.
And when we look at the 2016 American Community Survey, we get some really interesting data that can help us fact check this claim. And what they found in the latest survey from 2016 doesn't really align with what this group was trying to make out.
Mm-hmm.
So if we look at people who are aged 25 years and older, and that's important because if you're measuring bachelor's degrees, it's not likely that anyone younger has really had a chance to get a bachelor's degree. So first of all, we look at people aged 25 years and older.
Mm-hmm.
And what we find is that the top spot is in fact taken by immigrants who have moved to America from India.
Ah, okay.
So in 2016...
So Indian, yes, they can make that claim.
Yes, so India can claim that they have the highest educational level of all immigrants in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2016, there were just over 2 million Indian immigrants living in the country, and 77.8% of them over the age of 25 had a bachelor's degree or higher.
Who was then, who's second and between what, between the Indian immigrants and Nigerian immigrants?
So in second place, we had Taiwan with 72.3%. And then in third place, we had immigrants who had moved from Russia to the United States with 65.5% of them having a bachelor's degree or higher. But Nigerians do have something to boast about.
Mm-hmm.
They may not bag the top spot, but they are in the top 10. So in 2016, they actually grabbed the eighth place.
And the only African country in
and
the top 10.
Yes, and they were the only Egypt. Ooh, we
was
can't.
Also?
Yes.
Okay.
Egypt was also there. Egypt was in fifth place. But when we look at Nigeria, we see that 59.5% of immigrants to the country had a bachelor's degree or higher. If we just want to look at African countries, though, like we said, Egypt is in first place, followed by Nigeria, and then South Africa comes
really?
In at third. Yeah. So South Africans, immigrants to the United States, 58.1% of them have a bachelor's degree or higher. And of course, the thing to bear in mind is that the share is much lower for Americans, around 29%.
So Donald Trump actually should hear all of this because he's clearly put forward this Make America Great and America First. And yet, when you look at immigrants and what they contribute to any society, especially with that level of education, they are the beneficiaries. As America, they benefit immensely.
Absolutely. So, you know, stats are a very good way of making an argument better. And if you use them, you usually end up on top.
Well, he doesn't care much for such pursuits like science and so on. So I don't think Donald Trump will be looking this way at any time soon. Now, let's go on to the second claim. And this one was made by Nelson Mandela Bay Mayor Athol Trollope. And he warned against the possibility of the United States withdrawal withdrawing its financial aid to South Africa. He actually tweeted when the debate around expropriation without compensation, land expropriation without compensation, was been had in Parliament. And he said, the US gives us 300 billion rand worth of aid for the poor. There are conditions for that aid, including the rule of law and private property rights. President Trump is waiting for an excuse to withdraw that aid. That was Ethel Trollope.
Absolutely. So he was suggesting that we were risking, you know, losing a major blesser when it came to money coming into the country.
Yes.
And not only that, it is a lot of money that he was suggesting. And 300 billion.
And it could be withdrawn, the threat that it could be withdrawn.
Absolutely.
So readers and listeners asked you to investigate.
Absolutely.
This.
People were a bit skeptical of the mayor's math. Some people did some rough calculations and thought that it didn't quite line up with what they were seeing online. So they got in touch with us. We got in touch with the mayor's office, and we asked him where he got this information on, what he was basing it on. Unfortunately, we didn't get a response.
Oh.
Although we did get a response after the fact check, but we'll keep that for the end.
Mm.
So without any guidelines or arrows, big red arrows pointing us to where this information came from, we had to do some digging of our own. And we found a report which has a very, very fancy formal sounding name. It's called the Congressional Budget Justification of Foreign Operations. And that is produced by the U.S. Congress. And what it does is it details all the money, all the aid, all the resources which are provided by the U.S. to countries around the world. And it justifies why they're giving it. And it reports back on the impact that they're
having. So what is the nature and the amount of aid that South Africa receives from the U.S.?
Yeah, so I think probably a good starting point is, before we get to the number, is that the section on South Africa actually highlighted the important role that, that South Africa plays for the U.S. And it actually pointed out in particular that South Africa is a key player for U.S. engagement in Africa. And mm-hmm. it's seen as a critical partner to boost U.S. trade and economic growth, improve regional security, and mitigate against public health crises. And that's an important thing to remember when you're talking about aid, is that, of course, South Africa has reaps huge benefits from this money, but there's also a reason that it's provided. There's something that's coming back. And like this report suggests, stability in the region, you know, having an access point for trade, this is what the U.S. gets mm-hmm. in return for investing in the country.
Yes, it's
and
not for free.
It's not for
comes
free.
With terms and conditions.
So when we look at the actual, the hard figures, the dollars and cents, mm-hmm. what we can see is that in the last year, in 2017, South Africa received a total of 471 million US dollars.
Not 300 billion.
No. So my fast maths isn't that good, so I wouldn't be able to calculate that in my head, but I did it on a calculator. And when you use the exchange rate from the end of June in 2017, what you'll see is when you convert that to rand, it comes in at around 6.1 billion rand.
In 1 year?
In 1 year. That is what just South Africa received.
Mm.
So it is a lot of money. It's not quite as much as the mayor was suggesting. But there is a lot of money coming into South Africa, and it goes into quite a few good areas that we need support in.
So but is this the sum of what the U.S. gives? Because perhaps maybe there are other contributions, other forms of contributions
so this
that could
is,
form part of his 300 billion.
So when we spoke to the mayor afterwards, he pointed us to the source of the claim that he said he got it from. The first thing he said was that he made a typo. He didn't mean to type 300 billion rand. He meant to type 300 million rand.
Oh, that's a big difference.
Oh, no, sorry. He meant to type 300 million dollars. Yeah. So I think there were billions and millions being mixed up, multiplying, getting a bit mixed up.
Right.
So things got a bit lost in translation. But the money which we do get goes into very important things. The vast majority, way over 90% of it, is going into health programs. So that's HIV and AIDS, it's tuberculosis, it's maternal care, it's voluntary male circumcision. It's really trying to improve health outcomes in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then the important question is, and that's the second part, Can this money be taken away from us? Can the tap be turned off?
As you said, it's like he's inside Donald Trump's head. Donald Trump is waiting for an excuse to withdraw that aid.
So to get to the bottom of this question, we spoke to experts who work in global development and aid and understanding U.S. foreign policy when it comes to providing aid. And they work for the Center for Global Development. And what they said to us is that there are times and there are reasons that aid can be stopped from the U.S. to countries. And things that could cause that to happen were if there was a country where there was a military coup, mm-hmm. or if a country wasn't cracking down on the drug trade or human trafficking, and they would withdraw aid to try and hard arm that country into fulfilling certain requirements and meeting those things standards.
Like supporting terrorists, I suspect, or terrorist organizations.
Yeah, so things along those lines.
Fighting terrorism.
When it comes to land expropriation, though, they said it isn't cut and dry. There isn't sort of like point two in the US aid book is, you know, if there's land expropriation, cut them off.
Yeah.
It doesn't say that. What it does say and what it appears to suggest is that there could be considerations to withdraw or suspend aid if there was land expropriation. But it seems to be that it would be the case if the land which was being expropriated was majority owned by U.S. citizens, because obviously there would be interests there which would be at stake. Or in a second case, there seem to be restrictions for specific countries and specific circumstances.
Right.
So an interesting example is in Zimbabwe. Mm. And currently there are restrictions on aid being provided to Zimbabwe. And if aid is going to be sent to the country, the Secretary of State has to report to Congress that a certain number of things have happened.
Yes.
First, rule of law has been restored, including the respect for ownership and title to property, mm-hmm. as well as freedom of expression, association, and assembly. So there is an example of where the United States thinks that something happening in a country where it is providing aid is not acceptable, and it has withdrawn that aid, and it will only reinstate it once those requirements have been met.
Right. So in conclusion, The mayor's maths is off the mark. It was due to a typo.
Yes. So the mayor told us that he made a mistake. He meant to say $300 million. Mm-hmm. But that the mayor is wrong there. And like we said, the figure which we got is $471 million, which is about 6.1 billion rand. But the more interesting question is whether, you know, it can be withdrawn.
Yes.
And, what the expert said is, you know, that there doesn't seem to be an automatic legal trigger where if land expropriation were to happen, the aid was being withdrawn. Mm-hmm. They said it's not impossible, though. There could be country-specific restrictions. The Congress could enforce a restriction in South Africa if they weren't happy. But they said that they think this would only really happen if land expropriation was, first of all, large-scale, prolonged, and then there were other significant deteriorations in the rule of law. But they also said that because more than 90% of the aid to South Africa is really life-saving interventions, Congress would weigh the benefits of withdrawing life-saving aid, especially when that aid isn't really targeted or associated with property rights.
Yes.
It's life-saving stuff. It's making sure people with HIV and AIDS don't get infected and, you know, live longer. It's maternal and child mortality stuff. And they said that Congress likes those initiatives. They think they're important, and that any withdrawal of aid or consideration to suspend it would be carefully balanced against the impact of withdrawing an enormous amount of money that plays a big role in keeping people alive in South Africa and helping them have better health outcomes.
Right. There is a WhatsApp that says, linking Trump to this conversation about immigrants is disingenuous, since he only talks about illegal immigrants being a problem.
Yeah, so the data that we looked at doesn't give a breakdown, so we can't really speak to you know the qualifications of people who are in a country with documentation or undocumented in a country.
And this group as well said immigrants. Their response to Donald Trump was to reflect on the contribution of immigrants in the U.S.
Yeah, so
I think
they responded because Trump had suggested that these countries were not very nice countries,
mm-hmm.
And they were really pushing back, saying, you know, listen, there are people from our countries who have come to your country and are actually contributing and are, you know, quite educated, you know, people who are adding value to your country.
Yes.
I think that's the point that was being made by them.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was actually the response to Donald Trump's comments that we're interrogating, not necessarily the inclusion of illegal immigrants versus immigrants. Right. As always, thank you so much. But Kate, we obviously ask our listeners to send through whatever claim they'd like to have tested.
Absolutely. So we are at your beck and call. If you see a politician, a business leader, a union leader, you know, your local councillor say something and you suspect it could be a bit dodgy or they might be a bit more, tweet us at AfricaCheck, visit our website, africacheck.org, or tweet Azania and she'll pass it on to us.
Absolutely. You
and
can
we'll,
also email me. It's azania@702.co.za.
And we'll come back and we'll help you sort fact from fiction. And you can see where the truth lies.
Where the truth lies. So you can confidently challenge someone, you know, around that braai, around the dinner table, when we throw around these facts, because when we throw around these these facts because it's important. Misinformation must be managed, especially when you see the impact that it has. Look at the US elections, look at talk of what's happened in the UK, in Germany. So we have to be very critical of the sort of information that is peddled. So that was Kate Wilkinson from Africa Check as we bring you Matter of Fact. She'll be back second Monday from now. Thank you, yep. Kate.
Perfect. See you then.